Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. What if there was, as Stevie Wonder might sing, higher ground for content makers of color to make TV in a combination Netflix YouTube manner? Well, our first half hour guests are fashioning such ground with their venture, Black Tag, coming your way in early 2021. Chief Executive Aki Nagwabe and President Osman Sakosau join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Count on Fox to launch the fourth season of its popular medical drama, The Resident, January 12th. We'll have a preview ahead next half hour from executive producers Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff. Also ahead, Viacom-CBS's NAACP partnership moves forward, a Star Wars TV surprise, Hulu lands a pair, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and Tuner Radio, and presented on Amazon Music and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. We have hit the freezing mark right here at the top of the hour, and we welcome you this Friday afternoon to the Promo About Television. We got a great hour in store for you, wonderful guests all over the place, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's that simple. So pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers can anywhere you're crossing the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, it's no problem with us, because we got a chat room ready for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Speaker TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, and other people live with you. The dynamic duo behind Black Tag will join me here in the Big Apple after these news notes. Look for the new Viacom-CBS partnership with the NAACP to hit 2021 running. Quote, it is central to our mission, NAACP President Derek Johnson declared during a Walter Cates Foundation roundtable session in the last hour. I quote, we're pushing for diversity in the industry as a whole, a business imperative. CBS answered the call. We have stories to tell. Sheila Duckworth, the project executive overseer, called the development phenomenal. She added, we're just starting to dive in, she said. The partnership will engage a lot of buyers and will see a great difference in a short time. Johnson hinted that the venture will tackle global material and what emerges will be distributed worldwide. At last week's Mammoth Walt Disney content presentation for investors, Lucasfilm announced two offshoot series from Mammoth Disney Plus hit The Mandalorian. We'll make that three, with the first reaching Disney Plus next December. That series will be The Book of Boba Fett, with Tamara Morrison assuming the character playing the first Star Wars trilogy by Jeremy Bullock, who passed away earlier this week. It's not clear if this year will play along with The Mandalorian's next set of episodes or all alone a year from now. And again, the name of the program, The Book of Boba Fett, three Mandalorian spinoffs in the years ahead. A double dip of unscripted Hulu developments today. TikTok attractions Charlie and Dixie D'Amelio, along with the rest of their family, we profiled in The D'Amelio Show. Undercover Boss Officer Eli Holtzman will be one of the executive producers, with the series expected to debut mid to late 2021. Also, Hulu is picking up 40 episodes of Nature Series from mobile programmer The Dodo. Six series are involved, including Comeback Kids, Adoption Day, and First Taste of Freedom. The first batch of Dodo episodes began on Hulu earlier today. Now some quickies. HBO Max will give The Flight Attendant, starring Kaley Cuoco, a second-round trip on its service. Two Netflix renewal deals this afternoon, both for third seasons. The series recipients, Lock and Key, and Virgin River. Now, new Fox tune, The Great North, will start February 14th. A second season already in their bag. Peacock is now playing content 24/7 from Kevin Hart's Laugh Out Loud Network. The lineup includes scripted and unscripted humor series, plus stand-up concerts. An international TV programming exhibition, MIPTV, canceled this past spring due to the coronavirus pandemic, will return in virtual fashion April 12th to 16th. If the pandemic lessens, there's still a possibility there could be an in-person event in Cannes, France. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live to talk about a groundbreaking new venture early next year called Black Tag is its chief executive, Aki Adewabe, and also the president of the service, Osman Sakosau. Both of you, gentlemen, welcome in.
Hey. Hey, how you doing, man?
Hey, Simon, how you doing? Thanks for having us.
It is a pleasure to have you both. And Aki, we'll start with you. Bring us up to speed on where Black Tag is at.
Oh, definitely. So Black Tag just closed its first round of funding, and, you know, we're just building the team, building content, building the brand, getting the product out there, getting some noise around us, the buzz, and you know, we're really, really early stages now, but we're building, preparing for a launch in
Q2
yeah,
of next year.
Yeah, Q2 next year. Yeah.
And Uzo, what kind of buzz are you getting from the African American creative community?
I mean, if I heard your question clearly, you said what type of buzz that we're getting.
That's right.
You know, we're getting a lot of buzz. It seems like everyone is really aligned with what we're doing in terms of a vision and just product. There's a need for what we've been, you know, building for a long time now. What we often see is that, you know, a lot of major divisions will sometimes go and create a subdivision within their own ecosystem to directly leverage and target the Black audiences and Black creators. You know, there's several examples out there. I won't say any, I don't want to make a hit on any, you know, specific brand, but what we're looking at is really finding, building a destination, a unified platform that successfully is celebrating creators and bringing brands and audiences together specifically around Black alternative content. And so you could see that there's obviously is a need for that because of what the brands are doing, because it's directly targeted around their revenue. But for us, it's not about a subcomponent of that idea. It's really a solution that we're doing and building something that's more continuous around us, you know, scale and uniting Africa, Black Europe, and hopefully looking into the Latin American market as a destination as well.
Mm-hmm. Akeem, explain more about how this service works. From the announcement a couple of weeks ago, it sounds like you are taking two formats in one place, as you would put it. You have the Netflix format of premium scripted, unscripted content, and the YouTube kind of formula where you have user-generated content, scripted, unscripted, from people who want to break into the industry.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we just analyzed all the different ways to leverage technology, content, and Black creators to create a sustainable cycle of, you know, support for the Black creator community. So that's where we kind of landed in those, you know, middle ground between those two formats from a functionality standpoint, looking at entertainment platforms such as a Netflix or an HBO Max or something like that, that's subscription-based, that's more geared towards an audience to consume content. And then on the other side, as you said, more of like a social media or a social video platform that's more geared, that's a pretty much a the business model there is paid for by brands, partnerships. So looking at a sponsorship model and also looking at a subscription model, you know, both ways, something for the brands and something for the audience.
Yeah. And Usman, in terms of, I understand this is going to be an ad-supported venture. Have you gotten any feedback from advertisers who definitely want to be involved?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, there's been a massive inbound towards advertisers who are looking not only to get involved, but earlier this year during the pandemic, you saw what, you know, the injustice that hit within the, you know, cultural and political space within the U.S. And those advertisers realizing that more than ever now is the time for them to position their dollars towards underserved communities, right, and making a focus for that. So, yes. It's a reactionary decision, but it's a decision that it needs to be come to the forefront. And we are trying to build a place that's equitable and building for for audiences and you know, creators who have been long time been inside of a platform that's been underserved. So advertisers are seeing us as a potential to go to not only help the creators monetize, but also position them in a way where they can spend their dollars in communities that's more important to their product and their customers.
Yeah, yeah. If I can add really quickly, it's more like, you know, this drive to create a more sustainable cycle and where everybody's happy, you know, the advertisers and the brands. You know, it's no secret that the Black spending power, even in U.S. alone, is up to $1.5 trillion, right? And so, you know, we know that that's such an important, you know, consumer group to these brands. So in a more sustainable way, if you do want to invest in these communities and create that balance, we're saying, you know, invest in the creators, invest in these Black businesses. And the Black businesses are able to create, you know, the creators are able to sustain themselves, create these businesses and sustain these businesses. At the same time, they're able to create more authentic content for the audience, right? right, backed by these brands that are trying to reach that audience. So, you know, everybody's happy at the end of the day. Audiences get better content. The black creators and businesses, they, you know, the businesses stay afloat and they're paid. And at the same time, the brands are reaching the community that's so important for them, that 1.5 trillion spending power. They're reaching it in the most sustainable way ever.
Black Tag is the groundbreaking venture that we are talking about this first half hour on this Friday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. The venture is going to be going to smart TV sets and smart TV devices near you in the early half of 2021. We're speaking with the two people who have put this venture together, Chief Executive Akin Abuabe and President Osman Sacko Saud. They join us live here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Happy you're with us, too, on this Friday afternoon, especially those of you that are digging out from the snow that we had throughout the Eastern Seaboard the last 2 days. Simon Alvin with you live from New York. If you have a question or comment for our guests, ring them in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple0418. We have another trio of episodes coming your way on back-to-back-to-back days next week, as we did on Thanksgiving week, Christmas week, same thing, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at this very hour. Coming your way on Monday, we're going to feature an award-winning documentary producer directing Tom Jennings. He's done a lot of very interesting work. One of the documentaries he's known for is Diana in Her Own Words, which is run on several mega content services. He'll talk about the state of documentaries going into 2021 on our Monday program. Also, we will find out about Tough Love LA. It's the web series that is now the first primetime drama attraction for Cleo TV, the TV One spinoff. We'll talk to the creators of that show, Caleb and Ronnie Davis. It's all coming up on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. We'll talk to you about our other episodes next week as we go forward this hour. Akin, in the initial reporting about your venture, it was mentioned that people like Issa Rae, the star of Insecure on HBO, she has her own production company as well, and Common might be involved. Can you tell us who among the major African-American creators is definitely going to be involved with Black Tag?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those that you named are definitely involved from an investor capacity and from a partner capacity and also an advisory capacity. So we're very much engaging our community and some of the heavy hitters in our community. They want to see this thing work, too, and win, too. So, you know, it's our pleasure to partner with them and kind of, like, bring them in the family and launching this. But we do have very much a lot of the alternative creators, alternative black creators, that we built the thing for, right, which represents the future, which represents the brand. We've already locked in some initial projects with them. Obviously, I can't dispel too much right now. It's a kind of surprise. You guys have to wait for that. But I will say that we've been able to activate a slew of alternative creators across the United States and even in Africa. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Usman, one of the interesting, groundbreaking things about this venture, apart from the content, is who's investing in it. One of the major investors is a partnership between Creative Artists Agency, which is one of the largest talent management firms in the world. And what may be a surprise to a lot of people is New Enterprise Associates, which is one of the major venture capital firms in Silicon Valley. And I say surprise, because if you know the venture capital world, they have been way, 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 way behind the times on funding TV content. To a lot of VCs, TV content is dead last on the totem pole, if it's even on the totem pole at all. Two questions. First of all, how did you get this investment? Two, are you surprised that that NEA as a VC firm is investing in your venture, and why are they doing it?
I mean, to answer your question in really in all the folds, it's really content is king, right? And so when we set out to build this platform and really just the need and provide the solution, we saw that for us to really build it the right way and to scale it the right way, we really needed to go out and raise capital for it because it's indicative of that. And so just being at the front or just a frontier and pioneering a product that it needs to be built out the right way and needs to be, you know, representative of and be well capitalized and well funded. Pertaining to content specifically, content is something that we look at that is the future and that's driving culture and driving technology. And we're excited about different ways where we can create formats around content. You know, our buckets are filled within user-generated content, you know, original content where Black Tag acts as original studio creating long-form content, of course, and then also going into licensing content as well for the future, and as well as sponsored content. So all of that really takes an immense amount of, you know, scale, right? And so for us, we really want to strategically make the right, you know, moves to build something that is indicative of other platforms that's out there, but also is a standard. And so, you know, for us, NEA was the right fit, not only from a investment perspective, but also, you know, just from the team and just overall attention that they gave us early, you know, from the very beginning. And, you know, it was also just a cherry on top to also have CAA involved. Like you said, mentioned, CAA has been at the forefront of talent agencies and representing, you know, really amazing talent across the world. And our platform is built directly around talent and having talent close to us at such a high, you know, opportunity that CAA is leveraging is another just, you know, massive value. And so it was the right fit for us to go with them, and we're really happy and about this partnership and looking forward to building more opportunities in the future, you know, with them and moving forward.
Yeah. Akeem, do you think that with NEA getting involved as a venture capitalist, that this may unlock the door for more VCs, Silicon Valley, where we are in New York, and in between, to finally recognize that TV content can be a terrific investment? And not just, by the way, VCs, but angel investors. We know there's a lot of things happening now with incubators and accelerators that are being formed in recent months for television. But with the VC and angel world, do you think that this might unlock the door for the VCs to finally realize that, hey, TV content is a and TV services are a very good investment?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. This is you know, there as Usman said, there's several factors that went into that consideration by NEA and CAA. But I definitely think that's one of the I hope and I believe that this investment is one of the things that can unlock that. But I do think for us, there's several factors at play, and one of the things is simply that you know, NEA and CAA, they pretty much they agree with us. They believe in our thesis. They believe in what we were, what we set out to do, the problems that we're trying to solve, and that's really building a platform where, again, brands can reach Black creators in a sustainable way and reach the Black audience in a sustainable way. A platform that helps turn the immense Black creative power into economic power, because that's needed. And lastly, you know, the fact that new and alternative Black audiences are white and underserved, you know, so they agree with us in those pillars. And I think that's really the key driver in them investing. But you know, I think some of the residual effects obviously is as you said, you know, more and more opportunities are coming up, not to only invest in media and TV, but also to invest in, you know, media and TV led by, Black people, you know, and people of color in general, and just like, you know, finding ways to, again, sustainably enter into these markets that are very much a part of our culture, worldwide, really.
Yeah, I mean, to add to Akeem, I think it's also about innovation, right? There was a need for Black faces on, you know, to be on TV, and BT came to that solution. There was a need for Black voices to be on radio, and Radio One came to that solution. And now there's a need for a digital product, a product that is equipped for the future, that is less about just terrestrial TV, but more about, you know, building a foundation around creativity, around creators, but also, you know, keeping up with the future. And so we should build our own properties as well to, you know, to that regard. And so that's part of the solution as well, is to bringing, you know, Black content, you know, towards the future and building a technology that's around that. To sustain and keep empowering.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, so Simon, really, just to make sure, you know, I answer your question, we 100% believe that overall content is still king. Content is a giant, and that obviously will you know, reflect the effect of that is investors, VCs investing in you know, content, TV and film content.
You are hearing Akin Abuabe and Usman Sakho-Sow. They are the chief executive and president, respectively, of Black Tag, the groundbreaking new programming venture that will be coming to smart TV sets and smart TV devices in both the Netflix and YouTube matter combined, and that's happening in hopefully the first few months of 2021. They're both with us live here in New York this half hour. Internet radio exclusive interview right here on Tomorrow We Televise, the program about TV's current and future. Simon Abbott with you live from New Haven, New York. Good to have you with us. 30 degrees at the top of the hour. Snow is melting. We're supposed to get up into the 40s by Sunday afternoon. And if you have a question or comment on our remaining minutes with our guests, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. 90-minute edition of our program coming your way on Tuesday. We'll first of all talk to the chief executive of a company that's been putting together in the last year or two a number of medical services on smart TV sets and devices. The latest, which started a week or so ago, is Health for All Network. It's a health programming service aimed at communities of color delivered by doctors and nurses and medical personnel of color. You will meet the head of Boston Media, Kelvin Boston, will be with us. We'll talk to a very popular person we've had on before. His name is Brian Volk-Weiss. He's the co-founder of a company called The Cell Company that's made some very interesting unscripted series over the last couple of years for a wide variety of programs and services of networks and services. One of the programs he's working on right now is on Amazon. It's the second season of A Toy Store Near You. Brian Volk-Weiss, terrific guest. You'll enjoy hearing him. And then we will have Dan Galloway. He is the co-founder of Wirewax. You want to know about this company because it's planning to make some big news with interactive television in the next year. They just made a deal to do a number of interactive TV services for Chromecast and Android TV sets. And we'll find out about them because some of them are now playing. And I have to tell you, when this announcement came out last week, I was shocked at the lack of press coverage about this. This is a major new venture you ought to hear about, and you will, exclusively with us, next Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Akin, have you started to hear from people approaching with this idea? What you're doing, this programming model that you're doing, I want to do it for the Latino community, or I want to do it for the Asian American Pacific Islander community, or I want to do it for the disabled community, or I want to do it for the gay lesbian, I want to do it for the Native American community. Are you hearing people coming to you with that kind of talk?
Not as proactive since we're still early, but we've talked about it generally with different members and our friends and family from the different communities for sure. I think that what we're seeing though is and we're a part of that. This idea of like things are getting a bit more tribal, not just by race, but also by interest and people who are into pets might do something for pets. I think there's a bit of fatigue with the massive platforms, the generalist platforms, and more audiences are wanting something that's more geared towards them and just a bit more special for them, right? The giants that we're all used to are starting to get a bit gray in a sense. So I think that's more so we're hearing more of that. We think it's a general shift in trends towards more tribal focused things. And so naturally, yes, platforms for the queer community, LGBTQ community, platforms for Latinx, platforms for the Asian communities. We're definitely going to see more of that based off of these trends of again being a bit more tribal,
Usman, do you see, both of you see that next year could be a gigantic breakout year for programming and services involving communities of color? You get this, for example, Walt Disney has been on a tear in terms of trying to develop projects gathering communities of color together for programming. Tara Walden, the new head of Freeform, has got one. It was announced earlier this week that Ralph Barkmore, who had this program when he was doing Real Husbands of Hollywood with BT, and Bruce Smith, who did The Proud Family, which is coming back, by the way, in a new version on either Disney Channel or Disney Plus, they're doing a community of color thing. There's a new project called Giant Leap Accelerator working with Asian American Pacific Islanders to do a similar thing. Terrence Acedo, the creator of Vida on Stars, she's got the Latinx Content Lab that's happening with Universal Content Productions, UCP. You're getting this sense that, and you also have Cinedine working on a multicultural television network. There's a multicultural news channel I know of that a station group is working on to start next year. What's your sense about what 2021 is going to bring in terms of a new level of diversity in TV programming?
No, that's a great question. I mean, I think it's really just piggybacking off of what Akeem mentioned earlier, right? You know, we analyzed a lot of these effects and even our own past experiences from me working at, you know, Google formerly and seeing the need for seeing exclusive spaces, you know, within, these mass companies, right? And the focus that we saw was that as these massive platforms are becoming more and more problematic, creating spaces that are holistically made to leverage niche communities is the focus. Niche communities will solve, hopefully, respectively solve the problem that exists today and sort of, balance out the equation around a non-equitable world. Our hope is that this will create a more sustainable cycle around, not only in Black creativity, but also in Asian creativity, in Mexican creativity, around the world. More and more ideas will start springing about. And, you know, hopefully brands can gain more effective campaigns and better returns by focusing their efforts in those solutions. And creators and their ecosystems can hopefully gain artistic and economic power around that. And I believe audiences will start gaining better content that's specifically driven by their community.
Yeah. And naturally, Simon, the idea of the political landscape and the economic landscape and what's going on in the world and just like the a bit more enlightenment that's happening just like globally. I think naturally this also contributes to this. What is inevitable next year will be a Black renaissance, a Black economic renaissance, a Black creative renaissance. You'll see a lot more of these things popping up. We always like to say we're a very small part of a global movement, Black Tag is just one out of many things. You'll start seeing, Black social networks, Black, TV channels, Black radio, Black, driven content, that's on major platforms and major networks. Black series and films. So you'll start seeing the collective shift of this, and we're really placing big bets on that shift and what we see will be a trend. It's all coming. I'm speaking. We represent the Black community in general, but as Usman was saying, for all different communities all around the world. And different specialties and different focuses and different different cultures will be building platforms focused on themselves.
And one more thing before we go, the partnership between Creative Artists Agencies and New Enterprise Associates. This is something that we understand may fund other TV ventures and other entertainment ventures too. So keep your eye on this project. And it could be very, very interesting to see if other venture capital and angel investor firms get in before all is said and done. If you want more details about Black Tag, here's where you go online, www.blacktag.com. That's www.blacktag.com. We'll be following this project as it goes along. And Akeem and Usman, when it's all set to go, we'd love to have you both back, along with the creator on the Netflix side model, as well as the YouTube model, to showcase where this is all going. Gentlemen, thank you both for coming on today. All the very best with this venture in the new year, sooner rather than later. And again, like I said, we are delighted to have, we will be delighted to have you back on when everything's all ready to go.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much, Simon.
Have a great holiday.
All right. See you.
You too. And a wonderful start to the new year, Akeem Usman. Take care.
All right.
Take care.
Akeem Abuabe and Usman Sakosau joining me live here in New York. Once again, www.blacktag.com. More tomorrow will be televised in a moment, but first some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. Are you still looking for that holiday gift? How about a one-month trial to Audible.com? And if you're looking for a great book to hear, how about this one that's really empowering? It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. He's a terrific speaker that deals with financial education, and he has a great way to showcase it, and this book is one way to do it, audio-wise. So if you're looking, like I said, for a great holiday gift and you've got only a week to go to Christmas, well, this might do the trick. And let me tell you more about Audible.com. It is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from. You listen on any device, including wherever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of the service. You also get health and wellness material, too, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. And remember, if you're already an Amazon Prime member customer, guess what? Two audiobooks come your way during the trial, and one of them can be from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. It's original audio productions, best of Broadway, off-Broadway regional theater, and great one woman and one man performances. And by the way, if you want to skip the 1 month trial of the Righteous Suspicion, you can with Audible Plus. And if you do it now, you will have only a $4.95 a month fee for the first 6 months of your subscription. How's that for a terrific holiday gift for you or someone you love? And it is a gift that lasts a lifetime. So remember, make this the day that perhaps you or someone you know sees Audible Trial and Audible.com as the way that you hear what's happening in this mundo of ours. Again, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up next, our classic trivia of the week. But first, two of the executive producers of Fox's popular medical drama, Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff, will be with us live from Los Angeles, fourth season starting next month on your local Fox channel. The preview ahead after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradiospeakerandtunein.com, reaching over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for The Quiet Storm. It's beautiful music and great conversation, too, with Greg Lassiter. Check it out tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, The Quiet Storm, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. It's Friday afternoon of December 2020, a week to go before Christmas. Simon Abbott with you live from wherever you are. Two great guests coming away in the half hour ahead. So stick around and be part of the conversation. It's very simple. Pick up the phone and dial in at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And joining us live right now from Los Angeles, two of the executive producers of Fox's popular medical drama, The Resident, which starts its new season January 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkoff. Andrew and Peter, happy holidays and welcome in.
Thanks for having us, Simon.
It is a pleasure. And Andrew, we'll start with you. How are things going setting up for season four?
You know, it's been a bit of a battle with, having to shoot with COVID and dealing with all the sort of protocols that we have to make everybody safe on set. But, you know, we've gotten past the sort of initial hiccups and I think we're doing really well.
And Peter, for both you, and everybody else on cast and crew, what was the most difficult part of dealing with the pandemic, dealing with the filming?
Peter? Oh, I think we maybe lost Peter there.
All right, Andrew, go for it.
Can you hear me, Simon? Well,
sorry about that.
I'm
back. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, Peter, go ahead. I was just asking, what was the toughest thing about dealing with the pandemic in terms of putting your episodes together?
Yeah, I think it was getting everybody used to working within the new protocols that Andrew mentioned. Sets, television sets, are usually pretty freewheeling. Everything, you know, easygoing places. And now there were rules that were difficult to get used to. And our cast and crew were terrific and did get used to them. And once they got over their apprehensions, it's been working fine.
And in the, you know, I think our biggest problem. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say
what
you're going to ask
you
about.
What was
like,
the biggest problem?
Well, I think that, you know, I think when we started our show, writing the show back in April and May, and the biggest thing we faced was how are we going to tackle the idea of COVID-19 and this pandemic as a basic, you know, storytelling thing. I mean, this is like the biggest medical issue of the last, kind of like the last 100 years. So we had to honor that. We had to tackle that. We're a medical show. We're a hospital show. But at the same time, we just had to realize that, like, our audience, by the time we air, which is obviously next month in 2021, we knew that we were going to have had an audience that was living with COVID-19, living with this pandemic for months. And they were just going to be
you know, underwater with news about it and with the tragedy of it and with the problems of it. So we took a long time, Peter and I and the staff and Amy Jones, the creator, we just had to really hash out, like, how are we going to tell this story and what are we going to do? And that was a huge issue for us.
And in the end, Peter, what did everybody come up with? What was the conclusion?
Well, we decided that we were going to deal with the pandemic and the COVID virus in a flashback. We were going to tell a story in the first episode in a time when COVID is history, and we would flash back on the eve of a big event and flash back to the time when it was really bad, and we were going to tell the story of how our heroic doctors and nurses came through the pandemic to get to this happier future place, which, you know, in retrospect, we were kind of prescient because we are on the brink of vaccinations and, you know, a future without it. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, we had to really make like this educated guess. Like, we're sitting around our writer's room and it's, you know, June. We're in the middle of the pandemic and we're thinking, when's there going to be a vaccine? How do we incorporate the idea of a vaccine into our storytelling? And we, you know, we have doctors on staff. We have consultants. We have some of our doctors are frontline workers, like an ICU doctor, an ER doctor who dealt with COVID. Some of our nurses on production on set have been volunteering across the country for the last 8-9 months. And we talked to all of them when we said, like, when we air in January, what are the chances that there's going to be a vaccine? And we decided that the chances were going to be pretty good. And so that's how we set our first episode. As Peter said, it's set in a world where healthcare workers have been vaccinated. There's going to be a Nick and Conrad wedding, our two big stars, and we're going to see them get married. And that's going to be the bookend of a flashback episode where we go back to the heart of the pandemic and we get that cathartic story of our hero doctors saving lives and being in trouble. And we'll, you know, some of our people are going to get sick and will they live or will they won't live? And it's going to be, you know, there'll be cliffhangers and tragedy. And we decided that we rolled the dice and said, we can tell this story at this time with this flashback and with a world post vaccine. And I think it's going to pay off.
And we're not going to forget about COVID ever, that it never happened. It's going to play into episodes in small ways, but we're not going to sit in the darkness of the past and the pandemic.
For both of you, do you also get into, in some way, dealing with how people were treated, you know, and how people are still going to be treated, not just with the vaccine, with therapeutics, whether it's pills or inhalers or unique drugs or intravenous fluids that in some cases we've seen some incredible results in terms of victims of the pandemic who've recovered?
Peter, you want to handle that?
Yeah, I mean, we in the premiere episode, you'll see we focus on one particular patient, and it's a very emotional story. And we show certain treatments that were proved successful, but we don't get into the debate between all of the different possible treatments. That's not the direction that we go with the story specifically.
Yeah, and when we do flashback, we're still in the early part of the pandemic, so our doctors don't have all those therapeutics, you know, right at their fingertips to deal with people. So we're sort of showing early times in the pandemic. And then once we get to episode two, the pandemic's really in the rear view mirror. Like, we're not saying that COVID-19 as a disease has disappeared, but we are going to say that the pandemic has begun to recede into the past. So the need for therapeutics, the need for all those things, it's just not there. It was, you know, again, like this long discussion that we had in the writer's room about, are we going to tell a season-long story about just about COVID cases? And we made the decision that we really didn't want to do that, that our audience was going to be tired of it, that we as writers were going to be tired of it, and that we wanted to tell stories that showed that in the future, in 2021 and beyond, there's going to be other medical stories to be told other than COVID, and that those, you know, hospitals will still exist and doctors will still save lives, and we can tell compelling doctor stories that aren't just about COVID. It was sort of like a hopeful, let's look at the future as a, you know, a brighter place kind of decision.
Yeah, and piggybacking on what Andrew is saying, what real fans of the show will notice, aside from, you know, the really terrific, smart, exciting medical stories that the resident has always told, of which there will be many, we're also going to lean into a lot of the emotional lives of the characters and some of the soap that we have earned through the first three seasons. And I think the you know, the fans of the show will really, really love that.
Fox is bringing back The Resident on January 12th. It's on 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And by the way, right after that will be the season premiere of Prodigal Son, which is a series that we have had the creators of that show on early on here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Today we're talking with two of the key executive producers of The Resident, Andrew Chapman and Peter Elkopp. They join us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We want to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Don't forget, next week, back-to-back-to-back episodes of the program All About TV's Current and Future, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, our Christmas week gift to you. And coming up on Wednesday, we'll talk about a service called SOMM-TV. It's a smart TV programming service dealing with topics of food, wine, and travel. And it's just come out with a new show called Crushed. Yes, it's about the world of wine. And the interesting thing is, it was produced by all women crew. We'll speak with the dynamic duo who make Song TV happen, Jason and Christina Wise, and also producer-director Diane Carpenter. It's all coming up Wednesday, special day before Christmas Eve edition of our program, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Andrew, over the last or first three seasons of your program, what are the stories that your audience responds to most that you want to carry over into season four?
You know, I think we were born a slightly different medical show. So we were created, and again, Amy Holden Jones, creator of the show, really came from this book called Unaccountable, which is about the ways in which the American healthcare system is kind of broken, the way that money corrupts the system, the way that bad doctors slip through the cracks. And we, you know, we have our heroic doctors who are trying to reform the system. And we were like the first medical show to really show that. And all of our audience in some way, besides just loving medical mysteries and, you know, watching our soap characters, the soap lives of our characters sort of go up through ups and downs, I think that we've all had experiences of some terrible experience within the medical system, a bill that was for $10,000 that should have been for $500, a doctor that just wouldn't give us, you know, the time of day when we were desperate for a helping hand. And there are so many ways in which the American medical system is great, and there's so many ways in which it fails its patients. And so when we really hit that hard, when we, you know, like show that American patients can be failed by the system, our audiences just, they eat that up. I mean, it's so cathartic for them. So, you know, aside from we have Nick and Conrad and they're our heroic, you know, doctor and nurse couple, and we want to see them be together. And aside from, you know, our budding potential love stories with other doctors, and all of which is great and all of which our audience does love, and that's what television does well, I think what sets us apart and I think what keeps people coming back is that sense that we're trying to fix a broken system. And our audience loves that. And by the way, our audience loves that across the globe. We do really well in Italy. We do well in Brazil. Everybody knows that they just want a little bit better from their doctors. They just want a little bit better from their hospitals. And I think that's the key to our success.
Peter, is there a particular issue where the system is broken down that you want to address in season four?
Well, we will find we will come to the back half of the season, and we will, you know, in the first season it was bad doctors, and the second season it the broken part of the system that the show addressed was medical devices, and the third season it was the corporate ownership of hospitals. And we are going to launch a story and a villain of in the world of Big Pharma towards the end. But we're going to deal with the hospital itself and the problems within the hospital. We have a really cool story starting in the middle of the season where Chastain becomes a public hospital after having been a private hospital for so long. And it seems like that's more, there are complications that come from this that you wouldn't expect. So it's sort of that's our middle season issue, and we end with a big bad pharma story at the end.
And to just piggyback on that, what Peter's saying also, Simon, you know, when it comes to COVID-19, I think one of the things that has been really interesting and eye-opening for all Americans, and we specifically got this from one of our doctors who is a COVID ward ICU doctor. And she said that she works in a hospital in Boston, and that when the pandemic started, her hospital is a fancy hospital, and most of her patients were upper middle class white patients who had gotten the virus, you know, skiing in Austria or, you know, just like living their lives. And that as the pandemic progressed, those people who could afford to isolate and go home did. And her ICU became increasingly brown, increasingly people of color, increasingly the poor, and that white people stayed uninfected. And so COVID has kind of laid bare this inequity in our healthcare system, right? Where if you have money, you're protected, your health is better. And that's a shocking thing. I think that's been a wake-up call to a lot of Americans. And we are going to address that a little bit in our opening, but we're also going to bring in a sickle cell patient who has never really had the full attention of American healthcare, and who will then, in a story that goes forward in season four, finally get the attention of our doctors. And I think that sort of is another thing that we really want to shine a light on.
Yeah. For both of you, one of the issues that this pandemic has raised, and it's raising it post-pandemic, is this issue of lockdowns. And that because of lockdowns, some of which have been extremely severe, it's led to a rise in depression, a rise in suicides, a rise in domestic violence, which are health issues. And is there a possibility that at some point some of that might be addressed, the sort of after effect of that while maybe these vaccines and therapeutics are going to ultimately kill the virus, send it to kingdom come, that there's still this issue of lockdowns and say some people, you know, saying, hey, why are, for example, restaurants being told to shut down when restaurants are not the cause of people spreading the virus? Or the cause of people getting the virus, for example.
You want to take that one, Peter?
Yeah, we don't so much deal with, you know, the sort of ties into lifestyle and economics in that way of restaurants closing or not closing. But we will tell a story about somebody who has become unwilling to leave their home after the pandemic has subsided. So we're going to deal with the emotional and psychological after effects of it in that way, but less than in a sort of, you know, talking about what solution, you know, and things like that.
Yeah, and
I
think we also want to...
Go ahead.
Go ahead,
Drew.
Well, I was just going to say, we also are going to have, we have a couple of storylines that are going to be people who should have come in for treatment, but were afraid to, or should, you know, have been, staying safe in their homes, but haven't gone in to deal with the things that they should have dealt with. And so those will pop up as storylines too in season four.
We have a few more minutes with our executive producers from Fox's popular drama, The Resident. Starts season four on January 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time in your local Fox station, followed by the season premiere of Prodigal Son. Andrew Chapman, Peter Elcott with us. If you have a question or comment, get on the phone, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. For either of you, how do you want, or how does it look like your characters will grow in this fourth season? You know, it's a very different challenge from going from a first season to a sophomore or a sophomore to a third. What do you see in terms of the character growth and how they're grappling now with these issues as opposed to, you know, at the beginning?
Well, one thing that we're doing is because Chastain, our hospital, is going to undergo huge financial problems because of COVID-19, they're going to get taken over by the county in Atlanta, and they're going to become a public hospital. And a bunch of our doctors will then go from working in a fancy private hospital to a public hospital that has to deal with anybody who walks in the door, you got to make them better. And the crush of people who aren't insured or who have money and you have to help them. And so I think that sort of awakening to that is going to be a key part of a couple of different characters' growth. Wouldn't you say, Peter?
Absolutely. And of course, you know, we are seeing as you said, 4 years in these beloved characters' lives, we're seeing the changes that they've gone through as people as well. The changes in relationships and, you know, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but the big, you know, the big moments in the lives of people, we touch upon a lot of them for a lot of characters, and some of them are very surprising and touching and scary and all kinds of things.
But our longtime audience, we're going to put people together and they're going to be very, very happy watching what happens. So just know it'll even happen in the premiere and they'll be happy. We're going to give them what they've been looking for.
Along the way, do you think that, you know, not just both of you, but Amy, your fellow producers, the cast, et cetera, that what you're showcasing, what you're dramatizing, it is reaching the medical community. It's encouraging them to make a difference in their practices, how they deal with the world of medicine at large?
Absolutely. We have a huge, very loyal medical fan base. When in our first season, and I was on the show in the first season, Peter joined recently, we got a little pushback from some doctors. Oh, you know, why are you showing doctors who aren't just heroes? Why are you showing the problems in the medical system? There's enough people out there who don't trust their doctors. But you know what? We won them over. And we continued to show cracks in the system, but people who are reforming and making those, you know, papering over those cracks and then fixing the cracks and then having no cracks at all. And our doctor audience is very supportive. We get calls and emails from people wanting to talk to us and give us story ideas about problems in healthcare. So I feel like we're a bit of a voice for doctors and nurses and just healthcare professionals who see issues and want those issues, you know, raised.
I mean, I will say, like Andrew said, I joined the show for this fourth season, and I have entirely changed the way I think about going to a new doctor. I was very sort of blithely made an appointment with an orthopedist or whatever, just like anybody, any kind of doctor that anybody has to see. But because of reading Unaccountable and watching all the episodes of the show and coming to understand a little more about the cracks in the medical industry, in this country, I have become a much more educated and thoughtful seeker of medical attention when I need it. And I'm grateful for that, to be honest. And I think that there's probably a lot of people who watch this show in the medical business and out who have probably had that experience.
Season 4 of The Resident, it premieres next month, January 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox station. Check your locals where Fox is available in the area. And for more details online, Fox.com. The Resident, followed by the premiere of Prodigal Son, its latest season at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Again, that is on Tuesday, January 12th on Fox. Andrew Chapman, Peter Elcott, executive producers of The Resident, thank you both for joining us. All the very best to you for a great fourth season and beyond with your cast and crew. It's been a pleasure to have you both on, and a very, very merry happy holiday season to you.
Thank
happy
you so
holidays
much.
To you, Simon.
Happy
thank
holidays.
You.
Same here. All the greatest. Take care.
Bye.
Andrew Travin and Peter Elcott from The Resident on Fox, joining us live from Los Angeles. Very quickly, here's our classic trivia question of the week. Name the first pair to play assistant district attorneys on Law and Order. Who were the first? Name the actors who played the first pair of district attorneys on Law and Order. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, and close your name and address. If you're first with the correct answer, you win the Crazy Stupid Love DVD, the Talaria Clutch Plus Money and Card Clip, and the wonderful new book about the Sopranos, Off the Back of a Truck, by Nick Brocky, our guest on Wednesday. Final time the question. Who played the first pair of assistant district attorneys on Law & Order back on NBC in 1990? Email me with the answer, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, find the question on Facebook tomorrow morning, as well as on Twitter at UBC Simon PWBT. Thanks to all of our guests today, all of you for tuning in. Remember, we're back on Monday. First of three back-to-back-to-back episodes on Christmas week 2020. And our guest, by the way, on Monday will be documentary producer director Tom Jennings. And from Tupelo, LA on Cleo TV, which is on this Sunday night, by the way, creators Caleb and Ronnie Davis. Came in late on today's program. Want to catch up on episodes you missed? Go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and check out our podcast. They're available 24/7 at iTunes, Apple TV, Spreaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, Amazon Music, IRRadio.com, and some of our casts on www.mediaville.com, Media Village, the media leadership website. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going with projects like Black Tag? Well, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. And we love hearing what you have to say, and we do respond within 24 hours. Why? Because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not only those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program, our production associate at BTR's Mandolin, Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sonnenberg is head of content, and the co-founders are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow we televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two, 1 month trial, and more, audibletrial.com/televised. But tomorrow we televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend, however the weather is. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. First of our back-to-back-to-back episodes of Christmas Week 2020. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to now on Monday, please make it safe and make it great. And like I said earlier, let's lick this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.